This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network's studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is sponsored by Larson & Larson, intellectual property lawyers. Are you a writer, illustrator, or inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. The attorneys at Larson & Larson can help you. For a free consultation, call 727-546-0660. They're my lawyers, and they should be yours. Well, I'm very excited that today I have two wonderful writers in the studio with me. Gina Bardi, who is the author of a very, very fine book and funny book called The Cow in the Doorway, Love and Loss in the Time of Pot and Protest. And Jackie Minetti, who was here several months ago to talk about her book, Jacqueline, which was based on the adventures of her father in World War II in occupied France. So we're going to talk first to Gino, but it's nice to see you both. Hi, Gino.
Good morning.
And hi, Jackie.
Hi, Patsy.
Okay. Well, I'm so excited because, of course, Jackie, you also know Gino because you have interviewed him for what magazine?
The Island Reporter.
And that article is going to be coming out next month?
Yes, in May. The beginning of May.
Well, fantastic. So, Gino, it is, you know, when I got your book, I was like, whoa, I was just blown away. It is amazing. It is so funny. It is so fantastic writing. It's a coming-of-age story that is completely thrilling. And so let's talk about, of course, you're originally from New York.
I am.
And this story is based, I don't know, loosely on your life. But it's tell us about the story, because it's I think it's just fantastic.
Well, after that introduction, I don't know if I can live up to that. But It is definitely loosely based on my experiences when I was a freshman in college. I went to Cornell University, which was, I considered to be more of a college than I deserved to go to, because I squeaked through high school. I got a good average, but I basically figured out shortcuts to almost everything I had to do. So I never really worked very hard. And I didn't want to go to a school that was going to flog me on a daily basis. But this was a great idea that my father had. And he said if I got into it, he'd pay for it, which he did for a while. And then, so I went. And I found it very difficult. They put me in all beginning courses, you know, 101s. So it was like I was going to college for beginners. And all I really wanted out of it was to have some fun and find a girlfriend, and that didn't work out. I had an unpleasant, sullen, quiet roommate, and nobody had time for me, and it was a drag. And then I met the girl of my dreams, and the story is about meeting the girl of your dreams as a 19-year-old and what happens after that as you basically swim in a big pond trying to keep your head above water while the Vietnam War protests are going on and you're afraid you're going to flunk out and get drafted and people are plying you with alcohol and marijuana and speed to stay in school. And during the time period that the story takes place, the main character, who is not me, his name is Tony Vitelli, does a lot of growing up. He has to figure out what's important to him, how he's going to stay in school. He has to patch up relationships with his father, who cuts off the money and throws him out of the house. And he's got big problems with his roommate. He's got issues of latent racism lurking underneath the surface of his entire family background. And he has to deal with the fact that he's desperately in love with his girlfriend, and she just won't say "I love you" back to
him.
Well,
I tell you, when I started reading it, my first thought was, "Is this the first book?" Because it's so polished, it's so beautifully written. Your character development is fantastic. Your insights are both touching and aren't they amusing, Jackie? What did you find?
I adored this book. I really did. He just brought the characters to life in such an amazing way, and it brought me back to those college years, and I really felt like almost time traveling when I was reading the book.
Absolutely. I have never been to Cornell, but I felt after reading this book, and while I was reading this book, that I was there. And your descriptions are so good. It really is an amazing work. And I know it's based on your life, but there's a lot that's gone into this beyond that. And it's just how you have become a really great and fine writer.
Thank you.
I mean,
what can you say?
What can I say? Because when somebody can write so smoothly, it appears effortless. Now, I don't know how many years it took you to get to that point, but that's good writing.
Well, it is definitely my first completed novel, but it is not my first novel. I've written most of two other ones before this, and I've been writing since I was I decided to become a professional writer the day that I needed to earn $50 to take my girlfriend to the prom. And the easiest way to get $50, because I couldn't get it from my family, was to enter the Newsday essay contest, where if your essay was selected, they came over, they took your picture, they took you on a tour of the Newsday printing plant, and they gave you a check for $50. So that's what I did.
Well, you've certainly honed your talent and really developed it in a fantastic way. Because, when so many coming-of-age books are actually not that interesting. But this book, I mean, I could not stop. I wanted to know what happened to Tony here. I wanted to know, all of his thought process. And I love the roommate character that you developed there. I don't know if it's based on your real roommate, but it's beautifully done.
Most of the people in the story actually existed. They didn't all exist in my life at the same time. But the roommate depicted there is very much like the roommate I had. The people that the main character moves in with are the people that I actually met. They have all thanked me for how faithfully they have been represented in the book.
So when you were working on the book, how long did it take you?
It took about a year and a half.
A year and a half, wow. And, I know that you work with a writing group.
I do, and I think if I hadn't been in that writing group, I never would have written anything like this.
Well, that's why I always encourage writers to find a writing group, one that suits you, one that's supportive of the type of work you're doing. And I know your particular mentor is David Edmonds.
He is.
Who has been on my program. He wrote Lily of Peru, which is a book I just admire so much. And I think it's just fantastic, and I want other writers to look around for writers' groups and find the right one. Sometimes, you have to go to a couple maybe to find the right set of people sort of working on the type of book that interests you. And so I think that you've done a terrific job in, working with the writers' group.
I've told David this a couple of times, but I've learned more in his group than I ever learned as a writing major at Cornell. and it sounds nuts, but I did not really understand the structure of a story, the essential elements that go into a story, how the end of a story has to do with the beginning of the story, and what each part of the story is, what role it plays in telling the story. I didn't learn that in college. And I spent 4 years as an English major in a writing program. David harps on this every week. He is a stern taskmaster. And if you can't get it straight as to how to tell a story, that becomes very clear quickly in his group. And it was the best thing for me. And in fact, in the preface of this book, I describe how the book came into being, and that was basically I was sitting in a restaurant having lunch with him one day, and I was telling him a little bit about the crazy stuff I went through in college, and finally said, "Shut up, go home and write this down. This is a novel." So I did, and then a year and a half later, it was done. But he's a great mentor, and he's a great teacher, and he's a great friend.
I'm sure he's very proud of this book, because it's a fun read. I like books with humor and books that sort of tickle your pink kind of thing. You know, there are parts in this book that you just have to laugh out loud.
It's true. When I was reading it, there were just several times and I just had to put the book down because I was laughing so hard. And then right afterwards, there was something that was so poignant.
Yeah, exactly.
So you find yourself kind of ping-ponging between the sense of poignancy and this really funny stuff. It was just a great experience.
Because you do, Gino, hit on, as you mentioned, you hit on racism and the problem of that, Tony faced there. And it's how you handle it, I think, is really amazing.
Anybody that age, I think, let me back up a little bit. I think the age of 19, 18, 19, 20 is the age whereby you've experienced every emotion you're going to experience in your whole life. But they're incredibly intense at that age, because it's sometimes the first time that you're going through this and you have no idea what to expect. And it doesn't feel like you're going to live through it. So poor Tony goes through. I took everything that I went through in 4 years and I jammed it into like 6 months. And so Tony falls in love. He loses his love. He gets depressed. He deals with rejection. He deals with depression. He deals with the fact that other people don't like him. He feels like a failure. He almost goes to jail for being intoxicated. He does everything wrong. He makes one wrong decision after another, until it gets to the point where he's got to get his act together and figure out a way out of this. And if you look at what it feels like to be 19 years old and to go through all that, that's quite a clobbering.
And as I said, it can be so intense, but because of the way you've handled it, with the insights, the way his mind works and his observations, I love how he just makes all these observations and in his mind, and you're always the book just moves along so quickly. I was so surprised when I got to the end, because it was just moved so beautifully.
One of the things that really struck me when I was reading it was, as a female, getting the kind of glimpse inside the mind of a young guy, because seeing how strongly he's reacting to this relationship with this young girl. As when I was that age, you don't think of guys feeling that way. You think more that, well, you know, they kind of just fluff off relationships, and the girls are the ones that are really feeling this so intensely. But being able to see it from that different perspective was just really interesting for me.
It was. Seeing how Tony was so in love, it really put a whole new sort of impact on what you know, young college guys are thinking. And I like that. That was an amazing what you accomplished there. You know, making it bringing a sense of love that one doesn't necessarily associate with college guys, exactly as you said. So I think it's just beautifully done.
I think it's a safe bet to say that not all college guys react like that.
Yeah, but it was. I think it gives one hope.
Yes.
I think it gives one hope, and I think it's a nice idea. And of course, the whole thing of catching the period. Didn't he catch the period so beautifully?
Oh, absolutely. It really was like being transported back there. For people who have lived through that, they're just going to be able to relate on a really visceral level with what was going on in the story. And for younger people who just heard about that period of time, I think it's going to give them a real picture, a really accurate, detailed picture of what life was like and what kids were going through then, and
because kids today don't understand what it was like to be facing the draft.
Right, exactly. And they hear so much about the 60s and, you know, all of the music and the, you know, the drug culture and all of that. But this just really humanizes it.
It
makes them see what it was like. You really had the sense that you're walking around in Tony's skin in that book, and I think that's really what made it so engaging.
And do you play the guitar like?
I play the guitar just like Tony.
Just like Tony. Yeah,
badly.
Okay. Well,
badly, yes.
We have something to look forward to.
No.
I have to. yeah, we're gonna have him back with his guitar.
I sing badly too.
Okay, good. I'm gonna take a short commercial break, and we'll be back and talk more about writing, and we'll talk to Jackie about some of her projects, and we'll talk again to Gino about what he's doing next.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com. Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Looking for a good book? Whether you want the latest bestseller or a rare book, Haslam's Bookstore at 2025 Central Avenue in downtown St. Petersburg is the place to visit. Haslam's has been in business for over 70 years and is the largest new and used bookstore in Florida. With 30,000 square feet and over 300,000 books, you'll find just the right book for you. Bestsellers, cookbooks, military, history, and so much more. Check out their website, www.haslams.com, to find out about their special events. Remember, Haslam's, one of Florida's true treasures, 2025 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg, and they're open on Sundays from noon to 5.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my two guests in the studio, Jackie Minetti and Gino Bardi. Hi, it's nice to have you back here to talk about Gino. We were just talking about his wonderful book, a coming of age book, and I just wanted to say that it's available on Amazon.
The ebook is available on Amazon. You can search for my name, which is Gino B. Bardi. The B's.
And it's called The Cow in the Doorway, and right? You have to read the book to find out why. That's an important thing. But we're going to talk a little bit to Jackie. One of the things Jackie is working on, and this is a very important thing, because Jackie was a teacher, and teachers should always remember that they are so important to the lives of children. So for the good and for the bad, if you're not doing your job right, if you don't encourage a child, you can miss an opportunity. But if you have a wonderful teacher like Jackie, and she's going to tell us a story about when she was teaching kindergarten, but this is so important. I interviewed about 9 months ago, the poet laureate of the United States, Juan Felipe Herrera, and he was saying that his life was changed by his third grade teacher, because being a Chicano, his parents worked in the fields, he didn't have a lot of opportunities, but when he got to school, his third grade teacher recognized his talent and just encouraged him. And he was so grateful that she's alive today, and she has lived long enough to see him become the poet laureate of the United States. So all you teachers out there, think about it. Think about how important it is. Your influence can change the lives of a student. So Jackie, tell me a little bit. You were telling me earlier about an event in your life, and this is something that you're working on, a story. What is this?
One of the things that I really felt strongly about when I was teaching was making a difference somewhere, that it was my role to make a difference. And I recently got a story call out from Chicken Soup for the Soul. I've contributed four stories so far to Chicken Soup for the Soul editions. And this one was called Teachers and Teaching. And immediately, this story popped into my head. When I was teaching kindergarten, this goes back quite a few years, there was a little boy, his name was Andy, who was very unremarkable in terms of a student. It was a suburban school district, kind of upper middle class, and he was this kind of little bedraggled, unremarkable child. When he was in class, he was never somebody who raised his hand or who really engaged or stood out in any way. But one day, I was reading the kids a story about a baby dinosaur, and the activity was for them to draw a picture of their favorite character, who I assumed was going to be the baby dinosaur, because that was the character the kids all seemed to relate to. And when I came to Andy's table, he was sitting there with a brown crayon. I'll never forget it. And he was sketching the way an adult artist would sketch. There was none of that kind of awkward fine motor in that I saw when he printed letters or when he was trying to write numbers. His hand was just flying over the paper, and it almost looked as if he was tracing something he already saw there on the page. And he had drawn a perfect rendering of the baby dinosaur on the book cover. And in the background, there was this dinosaur leg that kind of extended to the top of the paper and then stopped. And I just sat and watched him, and I was mesmerized by this because I'd never seen a kindergarten child do anything nearly this detailed and this remarkable. And when he finished, he kind of looked up at me and he smiled a little. And I said, "Andy," I said, "tell me about your picture. What are you drawing here?" And he pointed to the baby dinosaur and he said, "He's my favorite." And I said, "Well, what's this?" And I pointed to the leg and he said, "That's his mommy, but she's too big to fit on the paper." And the scale was perfect. So I asked if I could have his paper, and I asked him if he could sign it. And he wrote his name, and he always wrote the D backward, like he would make a capital D, and I was always facing the wrong way. And when he wrote the letters, you could see that kindergarten hand. He was struggling with the printing. And I asked him, I asked him if I could have the paper, and he gave it to me. And I took it to the art teacher, and she was amazed as well. So I knew what I was seeing was not in the norm. And I began watching him with his drawing. And whenever he had free time, he would draw something, and I would ask him if I could keep it. And I put them all in a folder. And when his mom came in for a conference, she was very harried and rushed, and she was on her lunch break. She was a waitress at a local diner, and she was on her lunch break. And her husband was with her, and he was this kind of big, overbearing. I think he was a long-haul trucker, if I'm not mistaken. And I told her, I said, she asked about her son. "Is he causing you any problem?" That was her first question. I said, "Oh, absolutely not." And I said, "I want to show you something," and I gave her the folder of pictures. And she was kind of riffling through them, and she said, "Oh, I know, his D's. He just can't seem to get the D's to face the right way." And I said, no, that's not what I'm showing you. I said, "I'm showing you these pictures. You know, do you realize that this is really something remarkable?" And she was just flummoxed when I told her that. And she said, "Well, I have six other kids, and none of them really were into drawing, but Andy seems to like it. I didn't realize he was doing anything special." And I said, "Well, he is." And I suggested that she put him into, we had an after-school art program, and I suggested that she enroll him in that. And the father was kind of reluctant because he was trying to teach him to throw a football, and Andy couldn't throw a football like the big brothers. And I said, "Well, you know, this is where his talent lies." So, you know, years went by, and I was transferred to the middle school. And one day, this first day of school, this boy walks into my classroom, and he says, "You know, hi, Mrs. Minetti, do you remember me?" And I looked at him, and it was Andy. And he was his affect had totally changed. He was very relaxed and sure of himself. He was nothing like this introverted, shy little boy that I remembered. And he said, "I was so glad when I saw your name on my schedule because you were my favorite teacher." And he reached into his backpack and he took out this drawing of a superhero. It was this style called anime that I really wasn't all that familiar with. But I mean, this drawing was just amazing. It was as good as, if not better than anything a professional would do. And he said, "I'm really into anime right now, and I'm hoping to get a scholarship when I graduate high school and go to art school." And I said, "Oh," I said, "I'm so glad to see that, you know, you kept up with your drawing." And he said, "Well," he said, "if it hadn't been for you," he said, "you were the one that first made me believe that I could be an artist." And he said, "I just want to thank you." And I said, "Well, if you want to thank me, send me a ticket for your first exhibition." And, you know, years went by, and kids, when you teach, they move out of your life, and you kind of wonder whatever happened to them. And I think of him often. I still have his dinosaur picture and the anime picture at home somewhere.
Well, this is exactly what I always tell teachers when I speak to them, that this is so important to recognize the talent and to look at each individual child, but and to encourage them in a direction, you know, that, that is good for them. Mm-hmm. And as I said, Juan Felipe Herrera was given this marvelous opportunity by a teacher, his third grade teacher. And tell me, Gino, who was your favorite teacher when you grew up?
Did you have one? Yeah, I did. I liked my first grade teacher a lot. Her name was Mrs. Wynn, and she read to us every day from A Pilgrim's Progress. And then when I got into high school, I had a couple of teachers that I liked a lot. And I was kind of I wasn't an ideal student in high school. I was a cut-up. I couldn't let a remark go by without saying something that, in hopes of making the class laugh, and I got reprimanded a lot. But there was a couple of teachers that gave it to me right back and were better than me, and I've always respected them for that. But I've had a lot of favorite teachers. I actually liked school. It was fine.
And it has turned out great for you in when you finally got to Cornell, that your insights into school and to teachers and life, it turned out to be really great. So, Jackie, now this story is going to appear where?
Well, I'm working on it now. I'm going to submit it to Chicken Soup for the Soul, and then we'll see what happens.
Yeah, this is like, I don't know how many books they have out now, but
oh my goodness.
A lot.
Yeah,
a lot. And so that's something to look forward to. What else are you working on?
Well, right now I'm marketing Jacqueline, and that takes a lot of time.
Let's just remind some of the listeners who might not remember about Jacqueline, because it is a lovely little story about your father. And tell us about it.
Well, it's based on an experience my dad had in when he was stationed with the 127th General Hospital in France shortly after D-Day. And he met this little girl who just started following him around like a little stray puppy dog. And her name was Jacqueline. And they developed this lovely friendship. And when he was transferred from Rennes to Nancy, they had to set up another hospital there. He told her that if he ever had a daughter, he would name her Jacqueline, and hence my
Jackie.
First name. But my dad was 90, he turned 99 in October, and he had been after me since I wrote my first book in 2008, and since then, he's been hammering me about writing this story down, and I really never could see a niche for it until a man came up to me at a wedding and told me that he had a sixth grade daughter who would love this story, and it was like, whoa, I could write it for middle grade, and it worked. You know, I thought the story would work well for middle grade, and so I did, and it's doing well, and it seems to be getting a lot of good reviews. So
that's great. It's a great book. And Gino, what are you working on right now?
I'm trying to decide which of three projects I want to finish first. I have a collection of short stories, which takes the same character that's in The Cow in the Doorway from the age of about 8 to when he dies. He gets married, and he has kids, and he stays the same person from 8 to 70 something, and those stories are written. But I learned a lot from writing this book, so now everything that I wrote before has to be rewritten. I don't like any of it.
That's what happens.
So I have to start over again with that. And then I have two other novels that are almost finished. One of them is not a coming of age book. It's more of just a young adult book about kids in high school that have a radio station that turns out to be they tell everybody is a low power student radio station, but in fact it's a hugely powerful station that one of the kids builds from scrap from World War II transmitters, and the fun that ensues when they go on the air and they're chased by the FCC and all kinds of stuff like that. That was great fun. That happened too. And then the last thing hasn't actually happened, and hopefully it won't. It's a science fiction story that takes place in the future about a con man who operates a cryo storage facility that people who have themselves frozen so that they can be reawoken later in the future, but he just takes the money, and I can't tell you the rest of that.
Well, that sounds like it's going to be fun. And, Jackie, last time you were here, you mentioned a Project Junebug. Mm-hmm. And Project Junebug, what is that about?
Well, that was the first book I wrote. It was, I wrote it right after I retired from teaching. I had done a lot of work with kids with ADHD, and I did my master's thesis on things that teachers can do to help these kids learn. And when I retired, everybody said, oh, you know, you should write a book about this. And I thought of a self-help book, but I thought, well, if somebody's got ADHD, they're not going to, you got to write something that'll hold their attention, and this probably won't if I write it as a self-help book. So I decided to incorporate the information into a novel about a teacher working with a high school kid who's been undiagnosed ADHD all his life. His parents, the dad is in denial because he also has ADHD that had never been diagnosed. And the boy is now in high school, and he's suffering from all of the fallout that comes from having to struggle and having a learning difficulty that's been unrecognized for a long period of time. And this teacher, she's young and idealistic, and she decides she's going to help this kid no matter what, and all of the fallout that ensues.
And this book is also available on Amazon?
Yes. It's available on Amazon, and there's a link on my website to it, to the Amazon page.
And your website is?
It's JackieMinniti.com.
And Gino, do you have a website yet?
Not yet.
Going to work on it?
That's on the list.
That's
I don't even have business cards.
Huh?
I don't have business cards.
You don't even have business cards. So have you done any book tours yet? Have you done any shows?
No, but I'm available.
You're available for a book tour, huh? Okay, well, that's one of the things that you have to do. I was recently talking, on Tuesday to Lawrence Block, and, he is the Mystery Writer of America Grandmaster in 1998, and for many years, now he doesn't do it, but he did travel around the country with his books in his SUV and went around and one tour. I think he spoke at 40 stops across the country. And this is one of the things that, as a writer, especially today, you have to build this platform, mm-hmm. a writer's platform, and get out there and do these shows and do these, go around. And in the publishing world, nobody does it for you.
No.
You know, it's not even the biggest writers today there's a limit to what even a major publishing company will do for you. So you just have to get out there and promote it. And Gino, in your case, I think your book is so good. I mean, first of all, have you gone up to Cornell and sold it?
No. In fact,
what are you doing? When's the next?
I'm not
reunion?
Actually doing anything until I get the books in my hand.
Uh huh.
I found that I personally cannot fulfill an ebook. So if you say I want your book right now, I can't do anything about that.
Uh-huh.
At the places where I have gone and I've spoken and I've read to people from my book, I've been on Wordier Than Thou twice, and I've been to a couple of libraries, and people have a good reaction, and they have their wallets open and they want to buy the book, and I can't do anything about it.
So right now it's available only in...
It's only available as an ebook, but in about 2 or 3 weeks it'll be available as a paperback.
Uh-huh.
It's going to... The whole project is going to Amazon, I'm hoping, tomorrow, along with the full cover. And then there's some stages before it's actually available. But I think we're about 10 days away from having it available. And then I'll get a pile of books, and then I will go out. Because it's very frustrating for me, and it's frustrating for the people that I'm trying to tell the book about to say, but I don't have anything for you.
So you will have the paperback book in what, 2 weeks?
In probably 2 weeks.
Okay, because I saw it on Amazon, of course, as I got it as a Kindle edition. You definitely need, and this is one of the things when you're a new writer to this whole process, you live and learn. And so you definitely need to have a hard copy to sell, and also to get people to
and,
buy.
And the first place I'm going is Ithaca,
yeah,
which is where Cornell is.
Okay, well, that's a great place, because I would think you have to get in the alumni magazine, and
they want a book too.
Yeah, yeah, they want a book too, because I think anybody who went to Cornell, especially anybody who went back in the 60s, will want this book, because it's so evocative of the period. And people will be trying to guess, who's this, kind of thing. But it's something that writers have to look for, all of these opportunities nowadays where you can promote your book. Jacqueline, where have you promoted Jacqueline? I'm calling you Jacqueline, but Jackie, where have you promoted Jacqueline?
Well, I do a lot on social media, and I've done several blog tours, and I've got actually a book signing scheduled for May 15th at Inkwood. Tampa.
I love Inkwood. It's a great store. For anybody who loves books, there are really two places in this area. Haslam's, of course, the best bookstore, I think, one of the best bookstores in Florida. And then, it's just wonderful to find a bookstore where you can, go and see the books and touch them and hold them,
That's true. And I have mixed feelings about it. In one way I'm really excited, and the other way I'm really terrified, because it's about 2 hours, and I could just picture myself sitting there for 2 hours with nothing to do. So anybody who wants to come and visit.
And so that's when?
May 15th.
May 15th. Mm-hmm. What time? Do you know yet?
I think it's 2 to 5.
Okay.
It's a long block of time. Isn't there?
It's an experience, and I hope that you have a good turnout, because I think Jacqueline is a wonderful read. And
you
just have to look for, first of all, you should be hitting all of the Army veterans organizations, VA and all of this, where you'll find World War II vets, and we have quite a few. Well, we have a lot here.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think a nice place for you to, to give a few free copies would be at the VA hospital. And that
that's
will get
idea.
The word out.
Mm-hmm.
That's important. What happens is when you find a few select places to give a book out, and then ask them to say, to tell people about it, and that then when they've read it, they tell their relatives, well, I read this great book. And just as Gino, when you have Cornell alumni, you have to, make sure, well, in your case, anybody who went to Cornell can afford to buy your book. Make them buy it. Don't give it to them. But in Jackie's case, to give some books to the VA hospital, and to talk to the people there, and say, this book, I think a lot of veterans would enjoy this book. It's also evocative of the period, and the families of any World War II vets would love to read this book.
It's funny, I was contacted by a daughter of her dad was in the 127th General, and she contacted me through the website, and she said that she was going to get copies for all her brothers, because she wanted them to know what her father experienced. Her father was deceased, and she was just so thankful that I wrote that.
Yeah.
that was very gratifying for me, because marketing is just so difficult, and particularly for writers who, writing is such a solitary
endeavor.
Such a solitary endeavor, it really is. And to get out and sell something is just
It's hard.
It's a completely different mindset.
Yes. And I love when I meet young writers. I met a young writer a few months ago, and she came to me, and she's finished her book, and she's ready to sell it. It's ready to, you know, get it out there, and that's it. And that's it. I mean, that's her idea. But it's over. Then the money's going to start rolling in. And I said, this is not Shades of Grey. You're not. It's not going to just roll in. You're going to have to get out there. And she hadn't done anything, and not even gotten a website. And so, it's just a process that you have to learn. And Gino, you have to get your website. You have to secure your name. And I don't know that there's a lot of Gino Bardis in this world.
There is,
but
in fact, one.
One.
And that's why I would say search for my middle name, which is B.
B.
Because somebody
Gino
named
B. Bardis,
somebody with my name wrote a book called Are We Aryans during World War II.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, wow. Are we? Well, you don't want to be confused with that. You don't want to be confused with that. You see, that's what I'm saying. You have to register your website and get your name out there the way you want it. And just look for the opportunities. Of course, one of the things, it's great that Gino's in a writing group, and this opens up a lot of avenues to meet people and to expand your base. I've had Jane Friedman on. Jane Friedman was the editor for I don't know how many years of Writer's Digest. And she's very big on, and anyone who's interested in learning about how to build a platform, I would suggest you go to janefriedman.com, because Jane has done this for 30 years, and so she understands the process. But of the importance of building this platform, be it Twitter, Facebook, of course, the web page. And then the most important thing really is, as I said, to find, well, you're lucky in your case, you both have a hook of where to go. Jackie, you have Army, World War II, veterans, French people who, you know, so you have a whole range of things. And of course, with Cornell graduates, you have, and just any college, people who went to college in the 60s are a good hook for Gino. So you have things. It's not as easy for people who write books about zombies, because you can't go to the zombies and say, okay, spread the word. Well, maybe you could. I mean, some of these people do. I was at a writer's group, and this person is writing a zombie book. I mean, they're so intense, and I think she really believes it now. I mean, she's like, okay, no, I'm saying, I don't think you are really zombie. I think she thinks there are. So I think she's like living it a little too deeply, but they're not really going to help. The zombies really won't help promote your book. Not at all.
My next book, I've decided, is going to be called Harry Potter and the 50 Shades of Twilight.
Okay. Sounds good.
I'm pretty sure that will have a large audience.
Okay, that should do it. Yeah, somebody wrote a book, and I was surprised that I don't know that it's something Harry Potter something, and a lot of people are buying it because they think it's has to do with Harry Potter, and it's like I don't like that kind of thing when people do about it. But it's funny, you could try to get something like that. It's amusing when people do. So when you're going to be working on Chicken Soup, and what else, Jackie?
Well, right now I'm agent shopping for a book that I co-wrote.
Uh-huh.
And it's an interesting story. I had a very dear friend who was a writer, and she had been working on this book, and I was helping her. I was her beta reader. I was helping her with the editing. And she became ill, and her health deteriorated, she was just, the thing that was keeping her going was that she just was so determined to finish this book. And she got to the point where that was not feasible anymore, and she asked me if I would finish it for her. And it was a real learning curve for me, because it's a memoir, but it's just a very unusual memoir about a guy who can communicate with people who have passed. And I never had any experience with this. It was not a topic I was interested in, or it was I mean, not that I was disinterested, but it was never something that I really thought about much at all. So I had to really kind of get myself into the mindset where I could, you know, they say write what you know. I felt like I was writing what I didn't know. And I just really learned a lot from it. And I find that now I'm much more open to, you know, all possibilities than I was before. But the book is finished, and we've been submitting to agents, and that's where we are in that process. But it's an amazing book. This guy, he traces the whole development of this. He calls it the given hand. His grandmother was able to do. She had this gift, and she was his mentor, and she helped him develop this, and how he was a Marine in Vietnam, and what it's just mind-blowing what he experienced over there, where he actually knew which of his core mates were going to survive and which ones weren't, and how emotionally traumatic that was for him. And he decided then it wasn't a gift anymore, it was a curse, and then how he came full circle. Well, fascinating story.
This sounds fascinating, and I hope that you find an agent for this. It's always a process that you have to go through. Anyway, I want to thank both of you for being on the program today. Gino, I think that The Cow in the Doorway is a great book and deserves a lot of success for you.
Thank you very, very much.
Okay, and Jackie, I want to thank you so much for being on today. And I just wanted to remind everybody, if you need something to do this coming weekend, today is Thursday, and at the Miami Avenue Wine Bar in Indian Rocks Beach, they have smooth jazz, and it's always so pleasant to just sit and sip some wine and listen to smooth jazz. And then on Friday and Saturday nights at the Miami Avenue Wine Bar, they have live music and dancing. Now, this has to be one of the only places around here where there's dancing. I mean, real dancing. You get up and you actually, you know, hold a girl in your arms, guys, you dance around, and they like it's fun. It's a beautiful location. It's just off of behind Walgreens in Indian Rocks Beach. It's just a lovely location. Beautiful. It's large. There's enough people. I think 60 people. It's beautifully decorated. A lovely ambience, and the wine is great. It's all natural Florida wines, and really a wonderful atmosphere, and a great place to listen to live music, which you can't find very often around here, and definitely dancing. And so if anybody's looking for something to do this weekend, I recommend that you go to the Miami Avenue Wine Bar. And I want to thank everybody for joining me today. Remember, I always say one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. So get busy. Start writing. There's so much that I'm sure you have to say, and just start writing. So, and meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it. And see you next Tuesday. Bye.